Okay, so we have a few minutes to talk about the beginning of Parshas Tzav, about Rishon of Parshas Tzav, and also to say a few minutes, a little bit hopefully also, about Shabbos HaGadol and the very unusual circumstances in which we will be observing Shabbos HaGadol. So just to try to give a few minutes to each, so we know the Parshah begins, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Leymar, Tzavis Aaron v'Yizbanav Leymar, Zos Torah Sa'olah. That here we have Aaron being instructed through Moshe about the Ola. And here, as the Znaim Torah focuses, that the Parsha switches a little bit from Vayikra, where Vayikra got us into the subject of the Korbanos, but there was a instruction to Klal Yisrael as a whole. Here we're focusing now on instructions specifically to the Kohanim. And the Lashon of Tzav, of instruction, of command, so Rashi has a comment that's often quoted, that Tzav is a Lashon of Zirut, of encouragement, Ein Tzav a Lashon Zirut, Miyad al-Dorot. And then Rashi quotes from Reb Shimon, from the Taurus Kohanim, V'yoser Torah HaKosov L'Zareid, B'makom Shiyesh Bo Chisar and Kis, that there's a greater need to encourage people when there is a monetary loss, which is an interesting focus here. Maybe, as the Aruch Chaim suggests, because it's not like the Shlomim, where they're going to get something out of it, they're going to be able to partake. The Ola is Kula Kolil. And it's interesting to note, as Rav Eli Lopian emphasizes, that you wouldn't think that if we need to have such encouragement, that even Aaron needs such encouragement, even somebody in that Madrega. You know, in general, the Gemara says that we don't have Gezeiras, we don't have Shlusin in the Mikdash, because Kohanim are Zrizim. The Kohanim are already people who are motivated, who don't really need extra steps in order to keep them in line. And yet, here we find that not actually a shlof, but you just find a language of encouragement directed at Aaron and his children. And the way Valio says here, you see that everyone needs once in a while a little chizuk. You never know, you could slip a little bit. And at least as far as this kind of verbal encouragement, everyone needs that. That's something that no matter who you are, you could use. And the Rabush suggests that the reference here is really to the Bailim, because they don't get a kapara for an Ola. So maybe, therefore, they're going to regret doing this. All they have is the lost money, and they don't get anything out of it. They don't get the kapara. So, therefore, maybe they need a little more encouragement. Rabbi Simon Shlita, a dear friend of Rabbi Simon, who's right now sitting Shiva for his father. It should be a Tzchus Elias Neshama for his father, Shabbat Nachas for his wonderful son, who wrote in his Sefer that the idea that there's nothing, it's not exactly true. So Chazal tell us that it is Mechaper, it's Mechaper for a Bitawase, if somebody neglects a positive mitzvah, or for Hir Halev, or for thought. So what exactly is that referring to? So he quotes there Rabbi Simon from the Divrei Yisrael, saying that Hir Halev is a reference to the good things that you never get around to. So the Bitzalah say, in that sense, that the idea that you wanted to do something good, but you needed more encouragement. You needed to be mezuzah. So therefore, that needs to be reflected upon here. And as he points out, especially now we're in Nisan, Nisan is a time when great things happen, so we need to be motivated in order to be able to bring about those great things. And that's a theme of this message as well. Now, we spoke last week a little bit because of our introductory observations for Parshas Vayikra. We spoke about the whole notion of learning about the karbanos in place of bringing the karbanos and extra levels of meaning that may have to us at the moment. So here in this week's parsha, so the idea comes up again in a more specific sense in the psukim themselves, because we find that this phrase, zos Torah ha'ola, this is the Torah of the Ola, and we find repeated references to a Torah of a Karban. So Chazal say Torah ha'ola, so that means that kala osek ba'ola ki'ilu hikrivo, that whoever is involved in the study of an Ola, it's as if he brought the Ola. And another opinion that focuses on the Torah ha'chatas, that whoever learns about the chatas, it's as if he brought the chatas. And there's a lot to ponder about this. Some of us we spoke about last week about the role of learning about karbanos in place of the karbanos, and whether that's an idea by Kol Torah Kula, or whether it's only true by the karbanos because of their unique properties. But it's very striking that there would need to be a debate about whether it's ka'ola or kechatas. What exactly is the point there? And the Marsha has a comment that chatas, you would think, is the chlal, maybe a strange choice, because you don't necessarily have to bring a chatas. So why should chatas is only supposed to be connected to an act of tshuva, essentially, an act of an avera? So if you're not chayiv in the avera, if you're not chayiv for the avera, so then what's the value of the chatas? The Marsha says that it must refer to somebody being labeled, so to speak, as if not only he brought a chatas, but as if he did a chait and he brought a chatas for it, which really seems to be hard to understand why that's something we should strive for. And the Rabbi Talbot Shluta has a beautiful article about this in the Mitoch Ohel on the Parsha, the first volume of Mitoch Ohel, where he goes through all these themes. But he notes the idea that we have that when tshuva is done, me'ava, when tshuva is done from a positive, affirmative place, so the Gemara tells us that zidonos nasim lo kizofios, that even your intentional averos can be counted as mitzvos, can be counted as positives for you. And that there's an energy that comes, and there's a power that comes from not having done nothing wrong ever, but having done something wrong and working to change that and working to become better. So essentially what we're saying is that through studying some of these topics, not only should it give us the merit of coming close to Ribbono Shel Olam, but even with that extra energy of somebody who went through the whole up and down and had the process of faith and then came back and fixed all of those lacks that caused that situation and brings them to a new place. And I think it's particularly powerful because if you think now in our situation, so the whole notion, we're talking about a carbon here. So a carbon is for a shogeg. So it's not really for a bala avera in the traditional sense. There's a lot to talk about, which we won't get to today, about why the Torah assigns a karban for a chet b'shogeg, and what does it accomplish. But one way or another, the idea of a shogeg is not so much that you sinned, in the sense of amazing, but it's an idea that you weren't aware enough, and that you were acting on autopilot. And this situation that we're in now, so part of its impact is that we're not on autopilot in any sense of the word anymore, and that everything we have to think about and we have to consider carefully, and we have to wonder about what's the best path. And that's something that we should take away from this experience, not living on autopilot anymore and not doing things automatically. And the difference between a shogeg and the right thing really lies in that space. And the notion of our study of karbanos and our study of Torah in general can help bring us to that place, bring us to a place of greater focus and awareness, there is a opportunity for that that we need to seize and we need to hold on to and we need to make the most of. So that's an important point that's also emergent from these psukim. Just try to pick out some more themes here. So Torah says, "Hia ola almok al mizbeach chav halayla ad haboker ve'esh al mizbeach tu kadba." So here we have ola. It's left on the mizbeach all night until the morning, and the fire of the mizbeach is burning it. So this is actually a reference to what's left over from the ola, the hekter chalavim ve'evarim that are burnt on the mizbeach and have to be burnt up before the morning. And there is a interesting machlokas here, that here, this process of the hekter chalavim ve'evarim, so that goes on all night. And this is possibly the inspiration for Meiriv. If we say that Tfilos are connected Karbanos, so then Shachris and Mincha are inspired by the Tmidim, and Meiriv is parallel to the Hekti Chalavim Ve'evar. So this idea is itself interesting on a couple levels, because first of all, Meiriv, I think we spoke about earlier in the year, because we had the opportunity to talk a little bit about Meiriv in Parshas Vayetze, when that came up, Yaakov's institution of Meiriv, we talked about the idea of Tfilas Arvus Rishos. And Tfilas Arvus Rishos, the notion that there is a particular element to the Tfilah that comes from a very personal place, and somewhat from a place of isolation and a place of aloneness. And yet, it's in that context that we're able to bring forth the most personal expression of relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that's a theme of Meiriv, and that's alluded to here also by the Karbanos that inspire it, in this sense, not the actual Karban, but the Hekta Chalavim Ve'evarim. It's also something to reflect upon in our current state. But there's also a machlokas, I started to say before, there's also a machlokas HaRishonim, that the first Mishnah in Brachos, so for those of you who were able to hold on to Daf Yomi for a day, so the first Mishnah in Shas, the first Mishnah in Brachos, talks about mitzvah of Kriyat Shema at night, and there's a machlokas about when Kriyat Shema ends at night. And what emerges between Chachamim and Gamliel is that Min HaTorah, really, Kriyat Shema can be said all night. And Chachamim said that there should be a Gezerah of Chatzos, that you should read it before Chatzos. And in the context of that, the Mishnah says, yeah, the mitzvot Salayla are generally all night. Like the Hekter Chalavim Ve'evarim, it's also all night, like we just read about there. So the flow of the Mishnah is a little bit hard to follow. Is it that just like Kriyat Shema, it's all night, but there's a Gezeirah of Chatzos? Or is the Gezeirah only referring to Kriyat Shema? So Rashi over there says that the Gezeirah is not by Hekta Chalavim Ve'evarim, that they didn't make a Gezeirah on. That's all night. But the Rambam actually says there is a Gezeirah there too. And it's an interesting discussion also, because going into Pesach is a parallel here, possibly between this and the Afikomen. Also, different views in Rishonim, whether there is a Gzeira, there isn't a Gzeira. So, about this Hekta Chalom Ve'evarim, so we have a Machlokas about whether there is a Gzeira. And Rashi says no, and the Rambam does have such a Gzeira. So there is a shtickle about this in the Chidushim of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, in the Chidushim of Yoram Alashas, the three volumes of Chidushim, and I think it's the first one in the first volume, so he comments there that he thinks this machlokas has to do with the principle of the Taz, which we've spoken about a little bit, and how I have more time to speak about more, because it's really a fascinating discussion. But the Taz has the Yisod that many discuss, even before him and after him, that it's possible for Chazal to add on mitzvahs to the Torah, or add on rules to the Torah, add on prohibitions to the Torah. It's something we've spoken about a lot, but says they're not going to be able to contradict the Torah explicitly. So if the Torah says something clearly, so then Chazal can't come and prohibit it. So the Rebbe thought that that was part of the issue here also. So could Chazal come and that you can't have a hekta chalav mevarim all night if the Torah says explicitly that you can't? He thought maybe Rashi was saying that they can't have such a gzeir because that's essentially explicit in the Torah. And the Rambam agrees with the Yesod in general, but the Rambam thinks, he understands it, that you have to distinguish between a mitzvah from the Torah, if the Torah tells you you have to do something, and if the Torah tells you you can do something. So here, this is not something that you have to do, it's that you could do it all night. So therefore, Chazal have the right to come and to stop it, and it also reflects the fact, and there's an interesting shtickel about this in the Avi Ezri of Rav Shach. There's a piece from his son-in-law, Bergman. I think we quoted his Divrei Torah from the Sefer Shari Orah, so Rav Meir Tzvi Bergman has a shtickle there also. So part of the issue is that here we have not just a positive mitzvah like Kriya Shema, but really this is also to avoid an Avera, that if we have the leftovers till the next morning, so that's going to be a problem of Nosar. So that has a different framework to it, and that's an interesting discussion to be aware of. Okay, so let's see what else do we want to add here. Okay, so maybe we just have a few minutes left, so maybe we'll just go for a minute to talk about Shabbos HaGadol and about that theme. So this Shabbos is a very unusual Shabbos HaGadol for us, that instead of going to shul to hear the drasha of the rabbi, so we're not going to be able to do that. I know many rabbanim are giving their drashas on Zoom and online and in related formats, both before and after Shabbos. President Berman is giving a Shabbos HaGadol drasha tonight, should all participate. And it's an unusual situation for all of us. And it's also perhaps ironic, maybe, that the idea of the name of Shabbos HaGadol, so there are many, many theories as to how we got this name, Shabbos HaGadol. And I remember Rabbi Chalap Zvayn Gizun told me many years ago, at that time he had been rabbi in his shul probably 50 years, something like that, 40-something years, and told me that every year in his shul he gave a different reason why Shabbos HaGadol is called that. The Shabbos HaGadol has so many different theories as to how it got that name. And one of the theories, maybe this one's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but that the idea is that the rabbi gives a long drasha, and it makes the Shabbos feel very long. So it's Shabbos HaGadol, it's a big Shabbos for that reason. Now our Shabbosim feel long because we're isolated, because we're not in the context that we usually have of so much interaction over the course of Shabbos, and we're not able to go to shul as we are so fond of doing. So our Shabbos, our Gadol, is going to feel Gadol in that sense, not so positively. But there are many other suggestions as to where the name comes from. And among them, the tour notes that there was essentially a miracle of that date. At that date, a few days before Pesach, so the Jews had to set aside the lamb for the carbon Pesach. And this was a very provocative act. The Mitzrayim worshipped this animal. And when they saw what was going on, it was being set for sacrifice. So they, you would assume, would get very violent. And it's a tremendous act of bravery for the Jews to be able to do this, but also to be able to survive this. That was a neis, and therefore there is a godless that we commemorate at this time. There are other suggestions. The Pri Chodesh notes that this is when we were given our first mitzvah, and therefore, essentially, we're like a bar mitzvah boy. We enter into godless at this time, or as the Chassam Sofer put it, that the Jews came back, they did the tshuva, their commitment to God, and therefore it's called Gadol for that reason. And there are those who also note that it's in the Haftorah, and that we have a pattern. We talk about so the phrase HaGadol there could be the basis for the Shabbos name. And very often when a Shabbos has a special name, it is a reference to the Haftorah in one way or another. But maybe just to draw on something that we spoke about a little bit, maybe we could just add one more thought, one more element. So we spoke about the concept of Chatzi Shir a little bit this month. We spoke about it in the context of Basar V'Chalav and a little bit in the context of Chametz and in a few other settings about the idea that there's a Torah prohibition not to have even a little bit of something that is prohibited. And that's also a theme from this week's Parsha, from Parsha Tzav, because if you recall, so we spoke about that there are two possible sources that the Gemara gives to establish the fact that this is a prohibition midoraisa, that we assume like Rabbi Yochanan that it's prohibited min haTorah to have even a little bit of this prohibited substance, of any prohibited substance. And the Gemara formulates it in two ways, a svara and a pasuk. So the pasuk of kol chelef in this week's parsha to apparently indicate that not only is chelef prohibited, forbidden fats prohibited, when you have the full shear that you'd be chayv karis for, you have the full kizayis, but even less than that, any part of it is prohibited. And the Gemara also gives the svara, and it's kevan de chazi l'tzerufe, yisur ha-koach, as we spoke about, that since you could combine this with more, so then this is also going to be a prohibited substance. So as we talked about, there is a machlokes as to how to understand that svara. Is that a gzeira deraisa, like we spoke about itself at great length? That was a major topic for a little while. That this is an example of the Torah giving us a safeguard, saying don't get involved in even a little, because that could trip you up further. You could end up eating more and then actually being chayav, what we call the potato chip svara, that you can't have just one, so don't even get involved at all. Or is it more what we would call a simen, that it's not that we're afraid of what will happen, but that this shows us that there is something inherently bad about this substance. And if you're going to be chayiv and onesh, you're going past a certain point, so that it must be that this is something which is inherently bad, and as soon as it becomes significant, then you are punishable. So those two perspectives have nafkaminas. We talked a little bit about the question of, does it matter that if we call it a siag, so then maybe we should say that in a situation where it's not feasible to finish the whole shir, that it shouldn't be usher. We went through a lot of achronim and others who had such a perspective. Or should we say that it's a reflection of the status of the item as negative, and therefore it's not relevant whether there's a concern of finishing or not. It's just objectively bad. So one of the issues, also very relevant to Pesach, that may be contingent on that question, is the issue of Chatzi Shir by mitzvos. So let's say Pesach night, if you only have a half a kezayis of matzah, so is there a mitzvah to have that? We know that you need to have at least a kezayis, one kezayis, two kezayis, and a big kezayis, whatever it is, but we know, let's just talk simply for a second and say, at least to talk about one kezayis. So let's say you only have a half a kezayis of matzah, so is there any mitzvah in eating that? And this was a discussion in the Achronim, And as has been pointed out, and Zom Nechemia has a shir about this, others point this out, that presumably it's totally on these two tzadim, that if you believe that the issue is that it's a gezeira, that we're afraid that one thing will lead to another, so then that's a svara that's relevant to averos. That's not really something that flips over to mitzvos. So it's only by averos chas tishir asum and atorah. So have a little bit of machos osuris. That's a problem that will come to a risk of having the full shir of machos osuris. But that logic doesn't really apply to mitzvos. But if we say that it's a reflection of the status, so that could flip over. That you could say that just like by an avera, if we say that you're chayiv an onesh for having more than a kezias, that shows you that even less than a kezias is bad. So then maybe that does flip. That if you're subject to a tzchar for having a kezias of matzah, so then that tells us that a little bit of matzah is a good thing, and it's kedai to do, even if you're not going to be yotze in the literal sense. You're not going to leave your obligation because it's not going to be enough. If you have more, you should do that. But it's not going to be nothing. It's going to account as something because if it's rewardable at a higher level, then presumably it's a good thing. So that's the general understanding, that if it's something which is a simen, which is a reflection of the status, so that could apply both to averus and to mitzvot. But if it's a siag idea, so then that doesn't really apply to mitzvot. It's only something to say by averus. But maybe we could tweak that a little bit, and maybe we could say that there is some relevance to the siag svara, even by mitzvot also, because it reflects the fact that we do create a certain pattern and a certain movement and a certain momentum with our initial actions. And that's a problem when they're bad actions because they could take us further and further along that path, and we need to make sure not even to get started because who knows where it's going to go. But it's true in a positive sense also that sometimes when we get started with just a little bit of positivity, that's something which can create a pattern for us that can also build upon itself and can also go further and further. And especially because sometimes we don't think that we're capable of great things until we try, until we dip our toe in and we do a little bit of something. So then you recognize that you are able, you are capable, and then you could do more. And then there could be even greater accomplishments. So it's not 100% true to say that the siag zera logic doesn't apply to good things. It applies, in a sense, to good things also if we wanted to, if we want to be aware of how that one step could bring us to very positive places. If we take a second step and a third step, so then there's no telling where that's going to end up. So the idea of a Shabbos HaGadol, Godless is a statement of aspiration, is a statement of where we want to be. Just like at a bris, we say, Zehakaton Gadol Yeh, that this child, we aspire to see him as not only an adult, but as one who is great, as one who can fill their potential. And if you can paint a picture for yourself where that potential is there, so then you're able to accomplish great things. And so the notion of the Shabbos HaGadol, the Shabbos where we paint such a picture for ourselves, and we imagine what we could be, and we look to try to actualize that. And here, again, it's ironic circumstances. We call it Shabbos HaGadol, and it's going to be a Shabbos where we're just by ourselves, where we're just in our own local homes, our own houses, and we're not even able to join the tzibur and shul. But we continue to look beyond. We continue to aspire to a future, God willing, soon, where things are better. And it's only one aspect of this whole mindset of aspiration and looking to the future that Shabbos HaGadol can be for us. So let's hope that we're able to take all of the lessons of our current situation together with the lessons of Parshas Tzav and with Shabbos HaGadol and its special Haftorah, and that, as the Haftorah also indicates, that we are able to impact on each other, and that we're able to have a synergy within our families where all of us are able to inspire and to motivate each other and to keep all of our respective spirits up. And through that, we should give as much meaning as possible to the concept of Shabbos HaGadol. So I wish you all a safe and healthy Shabbos HaGadol, and we will touch base regularly, and God willing, we'll set up something to figure out what we'll do next week, and God willing, we will figure that out soon. But I wish everyone a safe and healthy and happy and meaningful Shabbos HaGadol, and all of my writing. Okay.
Hey,
Shabbos.
Thank you. Have a good Shabbos.
Good
thank
Shabbos.
Have a good Shabbos.
Thank you.
Thank you.